This is The Side Hustle Show with Nick Loper, episode 42. Niche down and dominate.
Welcome to The Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey everybody, Nick Loper here. Welcome to The Side Hustle Show. This is episode 42, Niche Down and Dominate. My guest is Alex Harris, better known as Alex Designs, who I met in January at New Media Expo, and this is a good one. But first, like we talked about last week, applications are open for the first ever Side Hustle Nation Inner Circle Mastermind Group. Now, this is something we've been running in private beta for the last couple months, and just the impact and accountability has been awesome. So I'm ready to open the doors to a small group of fellow side hustlers who are ready to take their hustle, their ideas, their business to the next level. Now, I understand this will not be a good fit for everyone at this moment in time, but it might be a good fit for you. So here's the big picture vision. I'm picturing a small group, 8 members max, and we kind of meet each week for the next 3 months to dissect your businesses, your goals, really drive some momentum and positive growth, make meaningful progress toward your financial goals, your financial freedom this year. So if you're ready to take action, to connect with like-minded peers and really make something happen this year, I urge you to check out sidehustlenation.com/join. So what's the catch? It's $97 per month and a 3-month commitment. But of course, 100% money back guarantee if you're not getting value from it, because like I mentioned before, I aim to be doing this for a long time and I don't want to sell out my reputation for $97. Just not worth it. Again, I'm limiting this to 8 members so we can really have an intimate and productive group. So applications are open through March 15th, so just another couple days if you're listening to this when it comes out. I encourage you to head over to sidehustlenation.com/join if it sounds like something that might be a good fit for you. Fill out an application, and I'll get in touch for a quick Skype chat. Any questions, feedback, concerns, definitely hit me up. It's nick@sidehustlenation.com is the email. And if you're listening after that deadline but still interested, stop on by, get in touch. And because if everything goes well, round 2 of this Inner Circle Mastermind won't be too far behind. I do have a new iTunes 5-star review. This is from Austin over at the YoPro Wealth podcast at YoProWealth.com. He says, awesome way to break the corporate chains. The journey to an entrepreneur isn't overnight, and the Side Hustle Show is a great way to do it successfully with very little risk. Austin, thank you so much for that, and let's do this. Hey, Alex, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
Now, Alex is a fellow side hustler, a former side hustler, I should say, because he turned his part-time web design / conversion rate optimization / landing page design business, alexdesigns.com, into a full-time gig. He's the host of the top-rated marketing optimization podcast and has been in the game for, I don't know, more than 10 years. He's definitely put in his 10,000 hours and knows his stuff. So, Alex, tell us why Side Hustle? When did you get started in this?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely proud to be a full-time hustler now.
I love it.
But you know, hustling really just became part of my everyday. You know, when I first started on the internet in 2000, I immediately started working for a very popular diet and fitness website. And I started doing landing pages and conversion funnels right from the get-go. And, you know, I was kind of like just thrown into the mix. I started doing web design right away, HTML newsletters to landing pages and all that direct online marketing goodness.
And this was pretty early days of the internet. So this is, wild, wild west time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were still marketing to AOL and Yahoo Mail and, you know, welcome screens and leave behinds and popovers, you know, all that crazy advertising back in the day. And I literally went through every step of the internet, the dot-com boom, the recession, and I would see very, very popular companies be advertising in our newsletter and they would be out of business the next week. Cool. Like unbelievable. But during that time, I didn't realize that no one else was really doing conversion rate optimization or landing pages at the time. So I was like, wow, this is such a completely different approach than majority of what web designers are doing. So really in 2004 is when I branded myself as a landing page and conversion focused web designer. And I created a side business during that whole time. And I ended up working at that .com for a total of 11 years. And I had my side hustle gig going on for basically half of that amount of time. And the story that I want to preface it with is that we ended up going public. So I thought I was essentially going to make all this money and basically retire after this gig. And, you know, as soon as we went public, they basically fired the CEO. I ended up having like 30 more different bosses after that time. And we just slowly declined after that. And every single one of those new CEOs that they hired wanted to fire me because I was a top paid creative individual. And they're like, why are we paying this guy just to, you know, redo our homepage and do all this A/B testing?
Yeah. There's so a mindset of like, you know, design is, you know, commoditized and, you know, and it's once it's done, it's done. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, they made my job basically terrible. I loved working at this .com and they basically tried to force me to go out and I wouldn't leave. I was literally one of the last people to actually end up being fired. And when I actually was fired in 2011, I was unemployed from my drive home for about a half hour.
Yeah. I love that story because you already had built up all this, you built up your own safety net on the side.
Yeah, as anybody going from that transition from, you know, corporate to being a solopreneur or a full-time entrepreneur or building a team, there's just so many unknowns. I mean, I didn't go to business school. I was scared to run my own business.
Did people at work know about your side business?
Yeah, eventually all the CEOs, as, you know, I went through them, they all definitely knew. And I remember one time in particular, the CEO brought me into his office and he had me explain exactly what I was doing. And he basically looked at me and said, that's actually a pretty good idea, you know, so more power to you. You know, I always gave, you know, as much time as I possibly could to my full-time job. And, you know, I tried to definitely separate the two. But as soon as I left there, I was so excited to go home and work on my own business for sure.
That's awesome. He wasn't concerned about conflict of interest or any of that?
No. The only thing I could never work on was a diet or fitness website. And that was basically the only conflict that I had to avoid.
Gotcha. So in 2004, you set up shop and you've done an awesome job with the branding. In fact, before we met or at New Media Expo, I was like, oh, that's Alex Designs. And I was like, well, what's his real last name? It's like, oh, it's Alex Designs everywhere. So, but take me back to 2004 and kind of plant your flag in the sand. Okay, I'm doing this. I'm opening up my doors for business. How do you get your first clients through those doors?
Yeah, you know, in 2004, I really saw that it was a niche, and there wasn't really many people doing that. So I went and I found people who essentially got it. So I really defined my niche very early, and I was able to really focus all of my personal branding around that. I got Alex Designs as many places as I possibly could. Thinking back now, I probably should have got Alex Design as much as possible as well, singular. But, you know, you can't win them all. But I really went and I tried to find all the leaders in the industry, and I was trying to really get big clients. I really thought I saw myself having a unique perspective in the industry. So I literally went to them and offered to do free work for some of the biggest people in the industry. And a lot of them didn't really take me seriously, but the people who got it and I was really able to connect with, you know, I would offer to do free work for them, write blog posts for them, do guest posts for them, and really any way to really connect with them. And as I built those relationships, they knew that I was serious and I was reliable, and then they eventually started paying me.
So how do you go about approaching some of these big names? These are corporate clients or, you know, high-profile bloggers. What kind of businesses are these?
Well, they're nowadays – It ranges all aspects. I do a lot of startup prototype related projects so they can really get off to a best start. I do mid-level e-commerce sites where I do a lot of A/B testing. And then I also do a lot of big brand sites as well. And my unique differentiator as a web designer is that I don't really want to take over all of your web design responsibilities. I want to complement your team already. Like, I work with your web design team, or I work with your web marketers or your pay-per-click agency to really – because I've done so much A/B testing and conversion testing and landing pages that I see web pages a lot differently than most web designers. Like, I'm not focused on making them pretty. Of course, I want them to be beautiful and nice looking and have great usability, but – my main focus is the results. I want to generate leads. I want to generate conversions, and I want to maximize the ROI from the advertising money that they're spending.
Okay. Now, you bring up a really good point about most designers are concerned with solely the aesthetics. Like, how can I make it beautiful? I'm an artist, and I'll find these sites that like are crazy, like horizontally scrolling nonsense. It's like, okay, I understand you want to be different, but like, you know, sometimes just stick to the convention and figure out what works and stuff. Okay, so you go out and you pitch these companies, hey, I'm gonna prove myself to you, I'm gonna do this free work, and then from there they start referring you to other people, or how does that go about?
Yeah, absolutely. And the people that I really connected with back in 2004, 2005, they still refer me back to this day. I have people who refer me that I've never met. It's kind of weird as you grow. I've never paid for advertising to get business, ever. It's always been through referral or people arriving through my website. And because I saw things going on in 2004, I was number one for the term landing page design for about 7 years.
Okay, and some qualified leads.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I learned a lot about freelance web design very, very quickly. You get bad clients, you get bad contracts, you get burned. So you learn a lot about all those different things. And I had to really find a way to definitely stand out because – no, I wanted to charge a premium for my services. So in order to do that, you know, I couldn't approach it as, oh, you know, I'm just going to make your website, you know, beautiful. But my focus is actually the results. And one of the thought leaders at the time, you know, he eventually became my mentor, and he gave me the advice. He's like, charge as much as you possibly can because you're worth it. And it really stuck with me that you really have to value what you offer. I mean, you providing all the value you possibly can is definitely the most important thing. But make sure you get paid for your time.
And that's something that we've heard echoed over and over again on the show. Like, don't try and compete on price. It's just a losing game. So for the pricing and for a service like this, there's a pretty clear ROI for these companies. Like, hey, if we can lift your conversion rate, if you're a big site that's getting, you know, 1,000 visitors a day, 10,000 visitors a day, whatever it is, and we can bump that needle from, you know, 2% even to 2.5%, like that's worth huge, huge amounts to the bottom line. And so you can be compensated accordingly.
Yeah, and a lot of it ties into how much money that they're spending, especially when it's an e-commerce site and they're directly spending money, you know, leading up to the holiday season or throughout the holiday season. They're literally spending a lot of money on pay-per-click advertising to drive them to those landing pages and those conversion funnels. And my job is essentially to maximize their return on investment from their advertising dollar that they're spending. And what my real goal is actually to drive their CPA costs down. So I not only want to increase their conversions, but I actually want to reduce their advertising costs. Because if you ever work with a pay-per-click company or someone who's just managing pay-per-click on their own, more than likely they're spending way too much money on way too many keywords that aren't converting anyway.
Yeah, for my business, I've gone through some pretty serious 80-20 analysis, and we find out some crazy numbers. Well, what's the old saying? Like, you know, half of your marketing budget is wasted. The problem is you don't know which half. But now with pay-per-click, you can kind of see which half is wasted. And we came up with some really surprising results. Like, we could end up doing doing half the work and making probably 80% of the revenue as before. And so we're like, well, that's kind of a no-brainer. So we're working on scaling back and really dialing that in 2014.
Yeah, it comes down to, yeah, it's that 80-20 rule, but really finding out what that 20% is that you're going to make the majority of your money on, because you can't sell to everybody. You want to figure out who your clear target audience is and ensure that you're solving the problems in the right way. And if you're not generating direct income from those pay-per-click ads, then you want to be collecting leads. So there is some micro conversions that you and goals that you can create along that conversion funnel process. But, you know, yeah, you want to get the best return from the money that you're spending or the time.
Yeah. And kind of speaking of that deep dive analysis, it sounds like that's what went on in your business from the very get-go. Like, hey, you know, there's a million and one web designers out there. Everybody, you know, this is a skill that is not that rare, but I'm going to niche down and become the landing page optimization guy. And in that way, there's all of a sudden way less competition and a pretty clear, you know, value proposition too.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, because, you know, when you're able to really, you know, taking back even to your other question that, you know, web designers, you really want to, you know, make your website in general, you know, beautiful. But if you're really able to, you know, fine tune how things really work, you can literally create a map of where you want people to click on in the right places to get them to the finish line. And when you get the right clients who understand that it takes time to really figure that out, that's when it really becomes just so satisfying to increase someone's conversion. Because you get those bad clients and they drive you nuts about making your logo bigger, or I want the wow factor. That's the new thing. I want the wow factor. And you know what the wow factor is? They want a big image that goes 1,400 pixels wide on the homepage. That's what the wow factor is.
Yeah. And it takes forever to load and whatever.
Yeah. And they don't realize that, you know, the page speed, the download time of the landing page and the pages, yeah, that takes into account of the pay-per-click ads as well.
Don't look at the Side Hustle Nation homepage right now. I've got a giant ass image that goes across the whole screen. So maybe I'll have to have you do some work on that afterwards. But going back to the pricing, do you set up an hourly rate, or are you doing kind of packages for different companies? How are you setting up the pricing?
It's something I've tested myself in different ways, and what I feel comfortable with about charging is I sell a package. Some of my clients are in retainers, but usually an ideal client, they come to me and they want either some type of A/B testing or a landing page, and I'll create a small project for them that's essentially broken down by hours, but it's in a package. And, you know, we'll deliver them, let's say, one or two landing pages, and it'll be broken down by how long it's going to take for design, and then how long it's going to take for HTML, and then if we have implemented into WordPress or setup testing and stuff like that. So it is all project based, and if they want additional testing, we'll roll that into a retainer. But the landing page or that small project is essentially a qualifying project if they're a right client for us. Because what I definitely have found is if you rush, especially in e-commerce or big brand sites, if you rush into a redesign and you don't do testing up front, then you're more likely going to decrease your conversion rates once the redesign goes live. Because if you ever, you know, everyone talks about Amazon because they're always running so many tests at one time. And it's very rare that you see the web design change on Amazon. It's more like a tweak here, a tweak there, because they know that it's an iterative process. It's evolution to really figure out how to get, you know, get that website to the next level, you know, step by step.
Yeah, step by step, you know, kind of incremental improvements and stuff like that. I remember, you know, Zappos is one of my biggest advertisers, and they went through this redesign. If you remember, like, their original homepage, like, it's just a mountain of, you know, blue text links. It's like the ugliest homepage ever. And it took them years. Like, it was probably, you know, a 2-year design process. Like, hey, our redesign is coming out. It's going to be awesome. We pushed it back because we didn't want to roll it out in Q4. And, you know, finally came out and looked good. But, you know, I didn't see any of, like, the, you know, the incrementality of the rollout. It was just like all or nothing. We're going to hit the button. We're going to flip the switch on one day. And now it's going to happen. But, no, I like the idea of the pricing packages, because I don't necessarily care what your hourly rate is. Like, I'm buying a result, not, you know, I'm not buying, you know, a block of your time.
Yeah. And, you know, I've tested many different retainers, and if you get the right client, then it makes sense. But there can be certain clients who can be nitpicky about your time and how much you do. Like, I try to over deliver on all my clients. And if, you know, a client is just nagging me all the time and they're at a lower retainer than somebody else, you know, it's just not justified, you know, and I'm like, okay, you got to stop doing this. And when you itemize it in a project base, this is the how many screens you're going to get. This is, you know, how many pages in a WordPress site that you're going to get. It's going to be responsive or it's not. This is how many forms you're going to get. It's going to be a custom form. It's going to be a Gravatar form. It could be a HubSpot form. We do a lot of those these days. But, you know, when you're putting those things together, you're designing the site for the customer. As a designer, we want them to be pretty, but you're not designing it for yourself. You're designing it for the actual customer. Yeah. So, you know, working that into the pitch is what we do.
So if, you know, if your work had become so miserable and the company is on a downhill slope and all the CEOs want you out, how come you had to wait? And you got this business going on the side. How come you had to wait to get fired to make the leap?
Oh man, I was living the dream. four hours of sleep a night, wake up, you know. But I mean, really, as much as, you know, I hated the job, I was really passionate about it because I did help build the company, and, you know, I did it. I wanted to see it make it, and it didn't make it. You know, I just saw everybody getting fired. But essentially, for me personally, I was selfish. I wanted to milk it as much as I possibly could. I was scared as hell to make that leap. You know, I essentially had two salaries plus health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, disposable income was just not an issue. I was killing it. And I knew, I anticipated all the opportunity that was coming to me. So what did I do? I put money down on a house. I paid off my truck. I bought my wife the ring that she wanted. I saved for my wedding. I saved, you know, money for security, and I built myself a runway, and I bought all of the camera equipment I wanted. I bought, you know, basically I bought everything that I knew I wouldn't be able to buy as soon as I started to have to bootstrap.
Yeah.
And I built the perfect office, and now, you know, I work from home, and I'm able to really, you know, feel comfortable about, you know, my accomplishments.
No, that's awesome. I love that story. I'm going to milk it as long as I can. Now, did you ever run into the issue doing kind of client facing work but being tied up, you know, with your day job during business hours?
Oh man, I would stay up into the middle of the night, launch a site, and then basically have to go to work. And, you know, I couldn't really check to see if the site was actually functioning until lunchtime.
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely ran into those issues all the time. You know, as I said, you know, I literally had, I think, 7 different CEOs. So there was always transition going on in my job. And there was actually times where we were now a public company, so they were even unsure of what to do. So, you know, I wasn't really working at the time, but I was able to, you know, at least check the site, see what was going on, you know, at lunchtime, go and maybe fix a couple things. So I ran into all those conflicts for sure.
Yeah. I was just curious about how that, you know, anytime if you're building like a passive income quote, you know, business, you don't really have to worry about, you know, being inaccessible during the day. But if you're doing client facing work, you know, and they expect you to be on call or answering emails during the day, but you've already committed that time to an employer, like I can see how that would be a challenge. But Let's talk a little bit about your strategy today with the podcast launch and kind of going forward and kind of on this personal branding mission. What's the game plan behind all that stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, for a while, you know, after I got out of .com and I told you I was number one for landing page design for a while, and then Google Panda update came around and actually killed my whole entire search results. So I was so burnt out from working so much. I essentially had to take a year off and prepare to get married. Okay. And during that time, I essentially, you know, tried to just do as much as I possibly could to kind of get by. And during that year, Panda came out and so many different things came out. And when I came back into it in 2012, I was like, oh my God, I have no leads. I have no traffic. I essentially had to start over. So it was definitely a big wake-up call. I definitely took some things for granted that I shouldn't have. I didn't anticipate some of the changes that were going to come.
On top of the word of mouth referrals, there was a lot of leads were coming through through organic SEO.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And those landing page projects were the easy ones to kind of win over, you know. And I was already building a team. I already had subcontractors going on, and you know, all of a sudden it just stopped. Last year in 2013, I kind of reevaluated where my life was. I really wasn't happy where my business was, and I really needed just to get a new mindset shift and start to really figure out how I can stop being so selfish about, you know, trying to make as much money as I can or doing as it, 'cause it's not really about that. It's more about helping other people solve problems. So with the podcast, you know, I was really able to fine tune what my message is and try to figure out where the industry is in general and try to get my voice out there. And as I'm able to get my voice out there, I'm really able to help more people because I see a lot of people going through what I went through and, you know, they're scared to make the leap or they don't have as much opportunity as maybe I had at the time because it is a lot harder to sell stuff or make money on the internet than it used to be.
Yes, I can attest to that too. So you went after a more kind of, you know, customer centered, content marketing approach with the blog and with the podcast. I can't spit out words right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the podcast is, you know, it's called the Marketing Optimization Podcast because, you know, I've learned almost everything on the web through trial and error. I never went to marketing school. I never went to business school. So I'm essentially bringing on experts in marketing where I can ask them questions. So essentially I can learn and then my audience can learn from that as well. And it really helps me, you know, put things in perspective and keep ahead of the industry trends. You know, I had a lot of great guests on in the last couple of weeks and it really almost changed my whole lead generation strategy just from bringing on, you know, like Clay from Lead Pages or Amy Porterfield talking about Facebook ads, because all of that stuff comes into play, you know, these days. You can't just generate any kind of content anymore. You really have to go after your, you know, those target audiences.
Definitely. Now, today, are you focusing more on the actual design work? Are you doing more consulting for companies?
I've been trying to move to consulting for years. And, I definitely get a lot of good gigs for consulting, but I'm still trading way too much time for money. This year is really focused on building systems. I just hired as a subcontractor a project manager, and she's helping me really, you know, take some stuff off my plate so I can really focus. Because, you know, I have been, you know, somewhat of a control freak because it is hard to find people who do conversion focused design. You know, even some of my best designers, they're still too, you know, brand focused, and that's not a bad thing, but I still have to go in there and I still have to tweak a lot of stuff to pitch it to the final client and ensure that it's really going to work. If we put up a site and, you know, one of my developers for some reason forgets to, you know, upload all the meta tags, you know, I have to make sure that all that stuff is kind of in place. So I'm really trying to find people who I can really depend upon, who care about my business as much as I do.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, for any entrepreneur is you know, the delegation, the letting go, like that nobody is going to do it as good as me. And I've been through all of that stuff.
Yeah.
That's definitely an ongoing challenge I think everybody can relate to. So we're kind of moving towards wrapping up. If you could give yourself some, I guess if you could write, you know, Brad Paisley, if you could write a letter to yourself, you know, to your 5 years ago version of you, what advice would you give?
Yeah, well, I've always told myself that, you know, I'm a designer, I'm a creative, and I don't need to know business or like basics like accounting and stuff. And that's totally wrong. You really have to have some basic fundamentals of business in order to start a business. Like, both of my brothers are accountants, so I always kind of leaned on them for all of my accounting stuff. But if I want to figure out how to make my cash flow actually grow, I might need to know some basic accounting and business system fundamentals. So I definitely wish I kind of did that from the very beginning, because now going through it, you know, it's definitely hard to manage cash flow and ensure that all the projects are profitable and everything's still growing, because especially when you start to invest in buildings, because even now I'm a full-time hustler, but I'm still trying to build side projects on the side to see if I can get some passive income going. And if my client work, you know, all of a sudden gets too big, and then I can't work on that project. That project doesn't work well, and then all of a sudden I don't have any money to pay my mortgage. I'm like, So learning some basic accounting and business systems is probably what I wish I started to work.
Yeah, sometimes
with.
You got to dial back that growth to manage that cash flow, make sure there's still enough in the bank to pay the bills that need to come due. Now for the shoe business, it is the same story. Like, you could spend all this money on pumping up the advertising, and you got to pay Google, like, you know, basically the credit card. It's like, you know, net 30 or whatever. But then you won't get paid from your revenue sources, like, for another sometimes 60 days. You know, it's shoes. Half of them get returned anyways. And, like, it was definitely a balancing act there.
Yeah, and as you get bigger clients, and the bigger clients, they want to pay like net 60, net 90. Mm. You know, it's crazy. So you have to, you know, really anticipate some of those things and have the right runway, because it's
can be difficult. That's a challenge. So, Alex, thanks so much for coming on the show. We're going to wrap up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Well, definitely my number one tip, you know, after you really decide what your niche is and you brand yourself, you want to take everything that you know about online and get offline. I mean, I did everything through relationships, and, you know, go to meetup.com and find local meetups that you can meet other people and really connect with other people and create those real relationships, and then go find conferences or join your local chamber to really meet other people that you can connect with, because the offline relationships are really the most valuable ones.
Definitely. I couldn't agree more. So thank you so much. Everybody, check out alexdesigns.com. A ton of great resources on there, landing page templates and stuff. You can find a link to the Marketing Optimization podcast, and tweet them up at alexdesigns on Twitter.
Thanks, guys. Keep hustling.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
This edition of the Side Hustle Show is brought to you by my World Domination Summit tickets that are for sale. If you'd like to attend this epic event in Portland, July 11th through 13th, hosted by Chris Guillebeau, let me know. Unfortunately, my wife and I have got a wedding to attend and need to sell our pair of tickets. So bummed to be missing out, but it's an opportunity for one of the listeners to go check it out. Learn more about the event at worlddominationsummit.com or send me an email for more info, nick@sidehustlenation.com. I love Alex's call to build relationships online and offline, to be a connector. And this takes real work, especially for an introvert like me. There's a certain comfort and a certain inertia to overcome, you know, but this is something I have worked on and trying to make a deliberate practice at each day. So like Alex mentioned, you know, meetups and conferences, which are great, and I wholeheartedly recommend them. I actually met, like I said, Alex at New Media Expo, so there's proof that conferences work, but a couple strategies or tactics that I like for networking
online. So here's my top three, right? Number one is to tweet other people's content or comment on their stuff. And people really notice that sort of thing. So I use Feedly in combination with the Buffer app to get this done, and it seems to be working pretty well. Number two is to subscribe to Haro, to helpareporter.com. Each day you're going to get three emails with requests from journalists for sources. And of course, if you fit the bill and can help them out, great. But if not, the networking aspect comes in when you forward that query to somebody else you know who might be a better fit. And people are always appreciative when you're looking out for them and helping them to get press coverage and links back to their site. And number three, this is a new thing for me this year, is to try and write a LinkedIn recommendation for somebody each day. Now, we're in the middle of March. I haven't been able to do this every single day, but I have written a ton of them. And so far, the response has just been awesome. It's not like a certain percentage are going to turn around and immediately reciprocate by recommending me, which is cool, but totally not expected or required. This is one of those things I kind of consider it my, you know, one of the daily gratitude practices. You know, you're doing something nice for somebody else, totally unsolicited, without expecting anything in return. Anyways, that's it for this week. Get in your Inner Circle Mastermind application at sidehustlenation.com/join if you're interested in that. And until next time, go out there and make something happen. And I'll see you next week in episode 43.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.